Today, we are in the studio with Taylor Cecil, a highly acclaimed holistic movement and peak performance coach who's based here on the Gold Coast, Australia. He's a former professional triathlete and someone who has trained extensively at the Czech Academy and Prague Rehabilitation School. I really wanted to bring him on the show because after training with him and having him as my personal coach, the changes that I've not only seen in my personal health following his philosophy, but the back pain that I now have completely eradicated from my body since working with him has been absolutely mind-blowing. He's created his own unique blend of training and rehab methods, and he's worked with world champions, surfers like Mick Fanning and other professional athletes, and everyday people like you and I who just want to feel at home in their bodies again. Today, your body has been trying to tell you something that we are finally going to listen to. In this conversation, we are unpacking so many topics like the real connection between emotional wounds and physical pain, why your pain, inflammation, disease, or ailments are your nervous system holding on to more than that you realize, how stress, beliefs, and unprocessed emotions show up as disease, inflammation, and ailments in your body, the patterns that world champion athletes and everyday people out there share when it comes to healing their bodies, practical daily habits that create true mind-body harmony, and we're not just talking about morning routines. This is not your typical fitness or wellness conversation. This is really about understanding that your body is speaking a language and it's time we learned how to listen to it. If this is your first time here, welcome to the Worthy Podcast. I'm your host, Shani Thompson, and this podcast is where we get real about what it takes to build a life that you are actually obsessed with. And a huge part of that is learning how to come home to your body, regulate your nervous system, and really understand that you are the healer that you have been searching for. This episode is definitely for you if you've been dealing with chronic pain or injuries or different inflammation or chronic illness in your body. You feel disconnected from your body and its signals that it's trying to send to you. You know there's a deeper reason behind your physical struggles, or you're ready to really explore the emotional and energetic layers of healing your body. If you want to understand how your beliefs are literally shaping your body's ability to heal, then this episode is definitely for you as well. After I gave birth to Rui 3.5 years ago, I actually lived with some back pain that was about an 8 out of 10. It was pretty bad for 18 months. And I tried everything. I tried physios, chiros, every stretch and strengthening exercise that you could possibly think of, and nothing was sticking. And then I met Taylor, and literally in one session, he connected what was happening in my back and in my pelvis to the deeper emotional and energetic issues from giving birth. And he didn't just treat my symptoms. He really helped me understand the story that my body was telling. And within 2 weeks of working together, he helped me totally alleviate that back pain. That experience didn't just heal my back. It completely shifted the way that I understand my body and what true healing actually means. My mission here on the Worthy Podcast is to really help you remember that you are the creator of your own reality, and that includes your relationship with your body as well. So today we are exploring how your body is not separate from your emotions, your energy, or your beliefs, and how it's all beautifully interconnected. And when you really start to understand this connection, that's when true healing becomes a possibility. So let's dive in. I am so excited to have you here today. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks, Shani. So excited to be doing this finally.
We've been talking about it for ages. We finally got there.
Yeah. So good.
For those people who don't know who you are, please share with us a little bit about your story and how you got into this body of work where you help people with the physical, but also there's so much more depth to what you do.
Yeah. So Well, I first got into this work. I had the benefit of having a holistic coach when I was really, really young. So at about 16 or so, I was building myself up to race as a junior triathlete and bridging the gap into becoming a professional. And so I sourced a coach through my parents at that time, who had trained with this lady many, many years prior to that. And she was a holistic health and exercise coach. And mm-hmm. she was working with a lot of professional athletes. Her name's Kiki. Mm-hmm. And she was working with Mick Fenning and Steph Gilmore in the surfing realm. She was working with Marcus Ambrose in the racing realm. And she just had this, you know, all of these different athletes, but then she was helping them with chronic pain. And so I was exposed to her work really, really young. And it was cool because we kind of entered through the physical door. At that time, I just wanted to become a professional triathlete. Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, all that requires is being the fittest person, mm-hmm. and that's all it is. Mm-hmm. And I had that sort of a mindset about it. But, you know, she helped me so incredibly well on that physical side of things, but would also start to open the doorway into, well, what's my mindset like? What's my emotional regulation like? How do I go with that? Mm-hmm. And she would test that in training, in the physical. Wow. So she'd push me physically to the brink of breaking. Mm-hmm. But how do I break? What do I fall back on? What patterns do I fall back on?
Wow, interesting.
Where does my mind go? What do I start thinking about in that time? And, you know, I didn't know she was doing it, but she was. And then we would have these discussions and talk about what's going on there. And with that, you know, a core memory was being handed the book, The Seven Spiritual Laws to Success, mm-hmm. by Deepak Chopra. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And when I opened that book, which if you haven't read it, really talks about the whole energetic side of things. And I remember opening it and reading this new understanding of quantum physics, mm-hmm. understanding energy, understanding that our thoughts are really governing this process and this reality that we're living in. And I remember just feeling like I'd met home in that mm. moment, which now that I think back, being 16, that's or so a, and yeah. you know, having that moment was really, really pivotal, because it helped me to just open my mind into a deeper realm. You know, was talking about that we only perceive 4% of our reality, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. you know, I'm like, what's the other 96%? Yeah. And I'm just such a keen adventurer, and so yeah. keen to dive into the mystery of things that really became quite a beginning.
Yeah. Wow. Such a young age.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
And how do you feel like that training and that exposure at that age helped you with, like, being a triathlete? Obviously, you yeah. did incredibly well, but...
Yeah, well, becoming a professional and racing all around the world, I would have these moments, you know, I was traveling but I would be having this hydrogen-based water when I was traveling, and I'd be searching ahead of time looking for organic cafes produce and things like that. And I was really the black sheep at that time because people were using lollies for fuel, and, you know, we'd go on these long rides and people would be cracking open a few cans of Coke. And
yeah.
But I'm looking for – I've got this salt in my water and
yeah.
these different things. So it was a really – different approach. But really on that mental emotional part, I was learning meditation. Mm-hmm. Like gradually during this time, I was more exposed to Joe Dispenza's work.
Yes.
And I remember leading into the Noosa Triathlon one year, I was meditating on this race every single day.
Mm-hmm.
But not just meditation in sitting and shutting my eyes. I would be in the pool training, and whilst I was in the pool, I was actually in the Noosa River.
Yeah.
And then whilst I was riding through Currumbin Valley, I was actually going up Noosa Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And whilst I'm running through Broadbeach, I was living in Broadbeach at the time, I'm running mm-hmm. through hedges, but I've got tears coming down my face running through hedges, and I'm running as fast as I can. And I'm sure everyone was like, what's going on with this guy? But it's because I'm not there. I'm actually crossing the line, you know, with my yeah. arms wide, and I'm just finishing the Noosa Triathlon on the podium. And I would do that leading into races, and it would – the vision and the meditation would build upon itself every day and mm-hmm. over the weeks. And towards the end, leading into a race, the vision became really, really clear of how it would pan out to the point of what the weather would be doing, to who I would be next to on the start line and who I would be next to with a K to go in the run. All of these things would be happening in my vision, so much so that that's exactly how it would pan out in the race, like deja vu yeah. almost.
Yeah. Like you had already lived the experience like so many more times.
Lived the experience many times to the point where I would be running down a finish chute and I'd have this landmark in my mind as to that's when I'm meant to go, that's when I'm meant to kick.
Wow.
And I would sometimes not quite recognize that, oh, that's right, that's the landmark
mm-hmm.
in the real reality. Not that they're different, by the way. But I'd get to that landmark and I'd know that's when I'm meant to go. And, yeah, I'd be high-fiving people exactly where I'd envisioned them. And,
incredible.
And all sorts of different things like that. So, yeah, it really led into the power of the mind and the body connection.
Mm-hmm.
But things happening
yeah.
prior to that.
Incredible.
Mm.
You work with so many people, like everyday people like myself, all the way through to professional athletes, world champions. Tell me, like, what patterns do you see in the people that you work with that are healing disease, illness, pain, injury, or even just, you know, having experiences like that where they're actually creating the reality that they desire? What's the pattern that you see in those that are doing amazing things with their body and healing their body that way?
Yeah, I think a pattern has to be the development of their self-esteem,
mm.
their willingness and open-mindedness. It's like how coachable is somebody.
Mm.
And there's a coachability index that exists, and it has to do with, you know, the question of your willingness to learn. If you were to score that out of 10, if you're someone that's learning is a deep core value and you have a strong willingness, then you'd be a 10 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
And also scoring your open-mindedness. You know, we are mm-hmm. here to constantly be challenged on our belief system. If we stick to one belief system and that's all it is, then we become welded shut with our minds. We're here to grow and evolve. So your willingness and your open-mindedness have a lot to do with how coachable we are.
Yeah.
And those two, you know, you add those two scores and you get an index out of 20, and that will determine somebody's progress. Mm. But if someone's really welded shut, they're kind of locked down with the idea and becoming quite victim to their experience, mm. their pain or their inability to perform or reach their high potential, then that becomes a really weighted vest that yeah. will prevent their progress.
Yeah. Do you feel like people come to you because they want the change, say, like with their bodies or their performance, but some people are married to the identity of the pain or the situation or the environment. Is that what you mean by like their willingness or coachability? Like they're not willing to let go of a story or a belief that they have?
Yeah. It can be, the pain sometimes can be so great that they've really got to open the door to what's really going on. It's the pain teacher, as Paul Check would describe. And when it comes knocking, you know, we're here to really listen to what that is. It's not nothing, and it's not necessarily by chance. It's something coming forth through the body to help us to become more conscious. So pain or feeling like, oh, I just need help on how do I reach just my higher potential, or I've got this kind of vision in mind, but I want to unlock that further. I just feel constantly met with these blocks. Or somebody might come and they're just sitting in the nightmare. I just know exactly what I don't want. And I can't think about what I do want, but I'm so sick of this experience that I've got.
Yeah.
So we can be motivated in different ways, that nightmare, the vision, the dream of things. People can enter through different doorways.
Different ways, pain or pleasure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So people aren't necessarily like conscious that they might be holding on to something that is like manifesting in their body, like as either pain or inflammation, disease, whatever that might be. But do you find that people are open to exploring that when you kind of bring that topic up in discussion when you're working with them?
It's really relative. And it's really the art of coaching. You know, there's a science to things. There's 50% science and then it's 50% art. And the art is being able to recognize, how they might feel about that. What is their willingness, their open-mindedness? Because just to bring that idea to someone who may be really shut to it, can trigger a sympathetic response.
Yeah.
And when we're in a sympathetic response, that's kind of if we're in pain, it's the sympathetic side of the nervous system that will upregulate that pain.
Fight or flight.
Yeah. It's called central sensitization.
Yeah.
And if we're in pain and we go more sympathetic, then our nervous system is more elevated and the signals of pain therefore become elevated too. So it requires this artistic dance to be able to understand what that doorway is for somebody and how to speak a language or communicate that with every individual is always, always different and requires the ability to read, your energy.
Yeah. Read the room.
Read the room, exactly. And so it needs to be done in the right sort of timing or right way.
Yeah.
And that varies for everybody.
That makes sense. I mean, if you think about when your body is stressed, whether it's stress from environmental external factors or there's like a lion in front of you, you're not willing to learn. It's not a time to learn. It's not a time to be open to contemplating things. Like your body is literally trying to help you survive. So that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Yep.
So I'd love to talk more into like the metaphysical connection, I guess, between pain or illness, disease, inflammation, and how that's connected to like different emotions, thoughts, beliefs, behaviors. What's your perception on that and what you've learned? Like what do you see in others when you see a connection there? What's the most prominent connection, I guess, is the question.
Yeah, well, I think the basis of that is that we live in an energetic universe. We live under the law of vibration, that everything is moving, everything is vibrating at a certain frequency. Whilst we're sitting on these chairs, it's just a different resonance of frequency that's preventing us from falling through the chair.
Yeah.
Okay? And so when everything is vibrating at all the way down to that quantum level, it is energy, it's space. And well, then we go from that energetic realm, and when it comes to the body, it then transfers into the biochemical realm. Mm-hmm. So hormones, the production of hormones, our serotonin, our dopamine, the chemicals that move through the body. This biochemical level is really the bridge between the energetic and then the physical. Mm-hmm. As you were sharing before, if a lion's sitting in the room, well, we have a biochemical reaction to that. And it starts as a thought. Mm-hmm. And the thought is there, shit, you know, I need to survive. Yeah. And the biochemical reaction is the upregulation of adrenaline, cortisol, and other hormones and chemicals that are going to help us to get going.
Yeah.
And through that, that then floods the musculature, the myofascial system, tendons, ligaments, bones, and moves into the physical version of us to move into moving and taking that physical step that's needed in that moment. So, and the thing about that that is pretty important is that all three of those are not separate to each other. So when you say the metaphysical realm, we do that to try and compartmentalize it.
To make sense of it.
But it's kind of really time to start closing the gap on that and not compartmentalize it. So, yeah, when we are thinking repetitive thoughts, be it conscious, you're aware, or unconscious, you're not aware, well, those constant thoughts are having a consistent biochemical reaction in your body. And through that consistent biochemical reaction, we are flooding our body with whatever it is that's needing to be done relative to the thought that's occurring. And that's happening for us every nanosecond of the day.
Wow, yeah.
And when we get into the process of, you know, experiencing different emotions or different traumas, we're hearing this topic that they sit in the body. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, they do. They do. And there's ways to read that. There's ways to understand that. And there's ways to alchemize and transform that as well.
Yeah, I think one of the most profound things was when I came to see you for my back pain, because I had been dealing with it for about 18 months at that point. I don't know if you remember, but I remember the first session with you, I was like, yeah, this is like an 8 out of 10 consistently every day. Like, I've gotten to my enough is enough point.
Yep.
And I think it was like within half an hour, you had me lying down, like talking about my birth with Rui, and instantly like the connection there was made of, okay, this is connected to that. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't believe how just 2 weeks of working with you, like physically working with you with my body, but also the chats we were having and kind of starting to consciously become aware of the stories and the, I'm going to call it like little T trauma, because it wasn't big T, but it was just, I guess, the story I was creating in my mind about the experience, how it was so connected to that. Do you see that a lot in others? Maybe there's an event that happened that's brought on the pain, and the pain starts to sort of dissipate as they start to work through the emotions of that.
Every day. Every day, multiple times a day. Yeah, yeah. It's really, it's so interlinked for me over the 14 years of doing this stuff. It's not uncanny. It is has a direct correlation. Yeah, it's happening all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think when it comes to people's pain, inflammation, whether or injury, disease, whatever it might be, how do you think, like, what's the most underrated thing that someone can start doing to help themselves?
Yeah, well, I think, one of the things, you know, going back to your experience was we were talking about that, but at the same time that we were talking about that, we were talking about proper breathing mechanics.
Yes.
And we were talking about how the diaphragm is really the key stabilizing muscle for the lower back. and that when we're breathing correctly, we are supporting the stability of the back. So when you can breathe and expand 360 degrees into the diaphragm, well, that creates this horizontal tractioning of the fascia and muscles in the lower back. And when we create that traction, it creates a decompression through the spine, giving us space, more space to reduce any nerve issues, more space for a disc to heal, more space to create anti-gravity of the body, uprightening against against gravity. And we were going into getting that breath there. And breath is the key carrier of energy and information. Breath is life. Mm. And when we breathe well, we are transferring an energy and an information through the body and through every cell. And every cell has its own breath as well. Mm-hmm. It takes in and it pushes out. Mm-hmm. It takes in nutrition and it pushes out toxicity. And every cell in our body is doing that right now as we sit here. And as you were breathing and you were bringing that awareness and taking that breath all the way down to your pelvis, that breath coming down arose a consciousness mm-hmm. in your mind. And whilst I probed the question about, tell me about your birth experience, mm-hmm. it was really, your experience coming forth that brought that to the table in that moment. And it was the breath that enabled that to come through, for that to come through into your mind, for your brain to decipher and decrypt what's sitting within your body as an emotion or as a little T, as you mm-hmm. described before. Mm-hmm. And that was a guiding tool into that transformation, that new conscious awareness that you had. And, can imagine you having that insight and understanding and, I knew how you were going to just run with that in terms of, your incredible discipline to supporting yourself and transforming this consciousness and, the meditation work and things like that that you ran with on that to support your self-healing process. Mm-hmm. So that's really one of the greatest bridges for us. Is purely breath.
Breath, yeah.
Yeah.
I've never breathed as I do now since working with you. And I mean, I've been going to Native for 2 years now.
Yes.
It's like the longest relationship I've ever had with the gym because amazing. I think the philosophy that you guys hold there is like you actually see the results in the way that you show up, in the way that your body changes and your mind changes. And even like the bathhouse classes, like they're so breath-centric, which a lot of people would think like, why are we doing so much breathing? But explaining it like that, it actually makes so much sense why.
Totally.
And learning how to breathe.
Like, yeah.
I wasn't breathing properly.
Yeah, exactly.
It's almost like the pain was like keeping me like constricted, like I was really like having a shallow breath.
Yeah, amazing. And that's really what's happening there is that unconsciously or consciously – usually unconsciously, we don't want to breathe down to there because we don't want to feel it.
Mm.
And it's not just feel the physical pain, but it's feel the association with the emotional fear that we have with it. And so when we become an upper respiratory breather, it's an insight to us not wanting to feel what's really going on in the body. And so a way that we deal with that is to become numb to it. We desensitize to that. We remain upper respiratory in our breathing. We don't necessarily want to feel it because we don't have time for it, or we have a story about our emotions. We've been conditioned or brought up believing that they're a negative thing, and we hold on to that story. So instead of feeling that feeling, we won't allow ourselves to feel it. And now we get trapped in this pattern because we're creating a control mechanism and we're trying to control something when ultimately the body is wanting to alchemize this.
Mm.
It's wanting to transform the consciousness, this lower vibratory state that we're holding on to. It wants to shift it into a higher potential. It wants to change it. And that is our growth process. It's what we're here to do. So to develop a relationship with your body is therefore supportive of your growth to your higher potential, to what you're really here to do, to your uniqueness.
If someone wanted to build the relationship between their mind-body harmony, and like these topics are something that they're really interested in and they want to get into that a little bit more, what other than breath, what other things can people do to start really creating a healthy relationship?
One thing that I'm doing, you know, for myself and as a coach is helping people to understand and map their own nervous system. We have to understand what state we're in at different times. We have to become conscious of, what do I feel like? What do I feel in my body when I'm feeling sympathetic,
mm-hmm.
when I'm triggered by something and I'm reacting to something? What do I feel and what do I do? It's about becoming an observer to that. And when you can start to map what you do in that response, you can become more aware of it. And you map your nervous system in that way. So that's the sympathetic side. But when we go to the parasympathetic side of the nervous system, there's actually two branches off of the parasympathetic side. We have what's called our dorsal vagus, and then we also have what's called our ventral vagus side of the nervous system. And our ventral vagus is the parasympathetic side, so the rest and digest side,
mm-hmm.
that is really relaxing. Mm-hmm. It is when we feel like we're in our center, when we're responding to things, or when you're in a meditative state, or you're feeling so safe and so calm and relaxed with loved ones around you, you're sitting in more of the ventral side of the parasympathetic nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
In Dispenza's side of things, you're sitting more in that alpha brainwave state. You're sitting in alignment in that mm-hmm. side. And it's about mapping that. So understand, how do I feel when I'm sitting in that ventral, and what brings me here into this state?
Mm-hmm.
What supports me to drop into that experience? And when you can map that side of it too, you've got more of an understanding, and now you're sitting in the power of more choice. Well, am I going to choose to do things that support that process? Then we go to the other branch of the parasympathetic, and I mentioned the dorsal vagus.
Mm-hmm.
And this side of the nervous system is the oldest part of our nervous system. It's deeply reptilian, and it is the freeze response. So it's still parasympathetic, but it's like freeze.
Right.
And it's the dorsal vagus that activates in a deeply traumatic, a big T experience,
okay.
where you go into immobilization.
Yeah.
It sits in our system and in the reptilian side, because if an eagle was flying overhead and you're a little lizard and you see a shadow, you'll freeze,
yeah.
because that's going to keep you safe.
Mm-hmm.
But we have that inside of us. And the dorsal vagus is activated in some of those big T experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And the more of those that we have, and I'm not going to just say big T, I should say little T as well,
mm-hmm.
because a little trauma experience is also like an accumulation, a cultivation yeah. over long periods of time, not just, oh, it was a little bit of a stressful event.
Yeah.
It's like a little stressful event that happened every single day.
Yeah.
And that may happen in childhood.
Mm-hmm.
Whilst they were little T's, they cultivated in becoming a big T.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes our response to the little T's can be to disassociate, which is a part of the dorsal vagus. when we disassociate, we might tune out. We don't tune in because tuning out is a safety mechanism because I can't handle, I feel too overwhelmed in taking that much information. So we trigger the dorsal side of the nervous system and then we become tuned out. We don't hear what somebody says and so on. The other side of the spectrum is it can be so activated that we faint.
Right.
Okay, yeah. That's the dorsal side mm-hmm. of the vagus, the nervous system. Mm-hmm. Some people in big T experiences will feel disembodied. So an experience is happening and they're having an out-of-body experience.
Wow.
Well, it's the activation of the dorsal.
Yeah.
That creates it's like a that.
Protection mechanism.
It is. Yeah. Because then the mind gets less involved, but the body will still hold it.
Yeah.
And the active – and it's mapping that, like, do I disassociate? Do I tune out? What do I experience in those moments? Because if I'm tuning out, then I'm really activating this side and there may be something unresolved going on within the body, within mm-hmm. the nervous system. Mm-hmm. And when we can learn to map how we react in these moments, we can also get an idea as to, well, how do I think about myself when I'm sympathetic? How do I think about what's going on in my environment? How do I think about others or the world when I'm in a sympathetic state? Mm-hmm. How do I think about myself and others when I'm in my ventral and I'm deeply centered? You know, that's probably going to be think about myself well. I love myself. Yeah. I'm so grateful for everything that's happened. I have this ability to, you know, see others and whatever's going on for them or whatever reaction they've thrown at me, I feel like I can see them as a human being and I can honor them and respect them.
Mm.
You know, that's happening in the ventral side. Yeah. And then how do I think about myself when I go more into the dorsal side of things? Probably quite the opposite to the ventral.
Yeah.
You know, life is hard. I can't do anything. I can't move.
Guilt, shame.
Yeah. All those lower vibratory experiences happen. So when we can map and understand, we start to develop this deeper connection with our body. And that deeper connection, we can become more like sensitive to. Oh, I'm feeling quite sympathetic here. Okay. Mm. Well, let me go through some tools of practice. Let me sit here and breathe 5 seconds in and 5 seconds out mm-hmm. until I feel like I've calmed down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
A really cool experience that I have with my daughter Willa, she's 7, we do this thing where we breathe together. And I'll give a cool example. A couple of weeks ago, she was wanting to do a handstand into a walkover, a big back bend.
Yeah.
And she was at home and she was trying to do it and one of her good friends can do it. And she was trying to land it, but she was collapsing and she was getting pretty frustrated that she couldn't do it. And instead of me trying to fix it or put your hands here or put your legs there or get your legs to land on the wall instead of the floor first, instead of trying to resolve it through the analytical mind, I said, hey, honey, come on, let's breathe together. And she knows what that means. She comes and sits mm-hmm. on my lap. She puts her legs around me. We go heart to heart. And we just, over a minute, 2, 5 minutes, just start to sink our breath. And I'm looking to guide her into at least a 5 second in and a 5 second out breath. Mm-hmm. And if I can do that, what I'm doing is helping her come into her ventral vagus mm-hmm. side of her nervous system. Mm-hmm. And we might, you know, it varies at different times. Let's just say in this instance, 2 minutes of breathing, we sort of let go and she's like, she's like, oh, that feels so good. And it's like, okay, cool. Like you shifted your state. She knows what that means.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, okay, now, you know, try your walkover now. And now she's approaching the task, the challenge from her ventral side of her nervous system. Mm-hmm. From her alpha brainwave state, She's not trying to approach it from a state of feeling emotional, charged, mm-hmm. frustrated, and trying to be analytical or having a story that she's not good enough.
Yeah.
She's approaching it from a cleaner slate. And she practiced it with what I would call emotional intelligence. Mm. And then the next day when I picked her up from school, she came running to me and she's like, Dad, I did my first walkover in the playground today.
So cool.
And we celebrated and that was so cool.
Yeah.
But the only way that I can do that with her is if I'm in my ventral state.
Yeah.
Because if I'm sympathetic and I'm a bit frustrated that she's frustrated, then we can't breathe together. I'm not even going to come up with the idea of doing that with her. So I need to practice being in that state first and foremost if I'm going to lead her into the question and invite her and create that invitation. Hey, honey, do you want to breathe with me?
Yeah.
I can't do that if I'm not centered in myself.
100%.
And the goal of that is that she becomes, you know, a woman with a strong sense of self-esteem that if she meets a difficult situation, a challenge in life, that now as a mature adult, she can just simply breathe with herself and she can metaphorically hug herself into a ventral vagus state so that she can approach the task from a clearer mind with her prefrontal cortex and alpha brainwave state.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Mm.
I think that there's so much in that that I want to unpack, but for anyone who's a parent, I think that's really profound because my personal experience as a parent, I know that I can be a present parent, a calm parent, one that doesn't always try to fix things or even like gets dysregulated in moments where, you know, you're parenting a three-year-old, like things can get pretty crazy with a three-year-old sometimes. Yeah. I feel like my ability to be calm comes from prioritizing things like breath in the morning. But to prioritize breath in the morning, it requires me to wake up early. Mm. And to prioritize getting up early, it means I have to prioritize my sleep at night. And it's like this pattern of like, all these little choices that you can make to be in your parasympathetic state as much as you can so that you can, yes, serve yourself, serve others, but also be a great parent. I think there's so much in that.
Mm. Yeah, that's beautiful.
We could do a whole other podcast episode on parenting. When I wanted to invite you on, I was like, what do I want to talk about with Jay? There's so many topics. There's pain, there's parenting, there's all the things we've had good chats about. But I do want to ask you more so into like this experience with Willa and even just the people that you work with. Obviously having the belief that you can do something plays such a big part in your healing or your performance or even just, yeah, being able to be calm and in a place where you can function with emotional intelligence. Where do you start if self-belief is something that someone really struggles with?
Mm.
Where do you start to kind of build on that and grow it?
Yeah. Well, you know, self-belief, it's something that is grown and evolved. We're not necessarily born with it, but it's cultivated through a process. It requires a sense of safety, first and foremost. We can only feel confident and have self-esteem if we feel like we can spring off of the leverage of feeling really safe in life. If we don't feel safe, we won't want to accelerate into the experience. We won't want to go out into the world. It's like the development of our childhood. Between 0 and 7, we're developing our sense of safety that is in and around our family unit and feeling safe enough to start to explore our nature-based life because we are nature. And between 0 and 7, we're really developing our base chakra.
Mm-hmm.
And that for us really sits in and around the pelvis and the lower limb. And we're becoming rooted and grounded on the earth in life during that time. And when we are feeling and developing that sense of safety, then that helps us to want to explore life. But for some of us, in the first 7 years of life, we may have had an upbringing that wasn't necessarily safe. And that reduced sense of safety then has an impact on how to cultivate our self-esteem. So if we just try and start at developing self-esteem, we may not have the foundation and platform that's necessary to feel like it's a big springboard that's fully loaded that we can go out into the world with. Mm. We have to start with our sense of safety. And if we've had experiences in those first, you know, in this example, 7 years of life, then that may impact how we look at safety. And what is it to us?
Mm.
Like if you're having self-esteem issues, I'd explore the question of, well, what is safety to you? And when we really explore that question, it'll be relative for everybody. Everyone has their own idea of what that is. Mm. Because it's not just money, for example, because, you know, I've coached billionaires mm-hmm. that don't feel safe. Mm. And it's a paradox, or we think of it, it's not a paradox. We think that it is.
Mm-hmm.
But that's our sense of safety might be, I feel safe when I have a deep, nurturing relationship. I feel safe when I feel strong in my body. I feel safe when my kind of community is connected and feeling stable with each other. And then, you know, what is feeling unsafe? And again, we're mapping what that is for ourselves so that we can see its deeper truth, because
mm-hmm.
we might not even realize, but we might be holding on to old stories of what safe is that we haven't even explored before. Mm-hmm. And they may be, we might not recognize them. So we're moving through life unconsciously. And to feel safe is to really understand your own needs.
Mm-hmm.
What are my needs? And can I share, connect, and communicate with them? Or have I experienced in life when I do share, communicate my needs that they get shut down really quick, or the other person gets really frustrated by my needs, or or what? But at the end of the day, we're here to be able to express and share our needs and feel safe enough to do so. And that becomes the beginning of developing self-esteem and growing that confidence to be able to start to explore and do the things that we want to do and reach those goals and those targets that we want to set out to achieve.
It's crazy. I've never heard about that, the connection between self-belief and safety. That's a really cool concept to think about, and makes me think about people who maybe, yeah, have had experiences in childhood that were not safe, or even adult life in relationships that aren't safe, or just workplace relationships, even just things like that. And that is actually affecting their ability to believe in themselves and what they're capable of. And because of the self-thought patterns of, I can't do this, or I'm not worthy of this, or it's not safe to have this, then that becomes their external reality, because it's what's happening inside their mind. That's a really interesting concept to think about.
Yeah, and people might not feel safe in a one-on-one relationship,
mm.
but they haven't yet gotten to what their needs are and how to express that to then feel that safety.
Yeah.
Instead of just darting out of the relationship, it's like, oh, well, have I fully explored what my needs are here in it? Oh, total decompression when you feel safe.
Mm.
And as Joe Dispenza would say, you're either living in survival or creation.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we're living in survival, which is not feeling safe, then our ability to cultivate our creativity, our deeper connection to ourselves becomes more limited as well.
Mm. And is it just about like exploring what's not made you feel safe and like seeing the perfection in it, or see like what is it that most people have to do to kind of move beyond that block?
Yeah, well, it you know, for us all, we're all here to work together, to co-create with each other. And what in an ideal society and an ideal culture, we have wise elders and we have very mature adults. And they are there to help to support ourselves to move through this sort of stuff and to move out of what Bill Plotkin would describe as an adolescent consciousness into a really mature adult level of thinking, being, and doing. And that process is about having guidance, mentoring, and support through that. Not mentoring to deepen your understanding of self. And that happens through our pain. It happens through our past experiences. We don't bypass those. These experiences are on the way, not in the way.
Mm-hmm.
They're on the way to our maturation, mm-hmm. our maturing. And to have that guidance and support is really one of the first things that, you know, I would say.
Yeah.
Because it's a big topic,
right? Huge.
And we can't just, unless we've got a lot of tools and we've had a lot of support from wise elders and mature adults, can we then start to navigate ourselves through something like that?
Yeah. It's not like you can just read a book and go, right, I'm healed.
Yeah. And that's probably something that needs some maturity in our current society, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I read this thing and, you know, I've got this idea or understanding that emotions are held in the body, but have you been truly guided via someone who's been through that experience and
has the knowledge
and has the wisdom of that?
Yeah.
Because you're not a wise, mature adult just via the theoretical nature of a book.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's one thing to conceptualize a philosophy, but it's totally a different experience to embody it and experience it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why we go through challenging times.
Yeah.
Because it deepens that maturity. And then we have that wisdom to be able to, you know, support one another through their experiences like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think one of the greatest investments I've ever made in myself is mentoring and guidance, and you being one of them, which is why I was so excited to have you on the show. We're getting to the top end of our hour, so I could talk for hours here. I feel like we could do 3-4 hours and just nonstop talking, but I guess what I want to finish off on is what do your rituals and routines look like? I know you really embody what you preach. I'd love to hear like what that looks like for you. Obviously you've got 3 kids, so life can be full, I'm sure, but I know you also really prioritize your well-being. So how does that look for someone like you?
Yes, well, I'll share in the now at the moment. I'm currently taking myself through what's called a gong. A gong is 100 days straight of Tai Chi.
Amazing.
Every morning, at least 15 minutes.
I love Tai Chi.
Yeah. So one of the first things that I do when I'm waking up is going into that practice. And for me, that's a meditation, but it's a movement meditation. And I've been through many phases of what rituals and routines look like. And I'm landing in this one again. I've done a few gongs, but Tai Chi is this mind-body connection because there's a movement process with the body too. And there is a creation of rhythm with the breath and connection into the body. And so that's probably like a key practice at the moment.
Love it.
When I can, I might do a night meditation when it can arise.
Yeah.
And the honesty of that is that it's not happening every single night.
Yeah.
That's one practice. And then the movement practice, training at Native State as well, moving my body.
The best place to train.
And that is one part. And then, you know, when I was 16, I learned about Paul Check's four doctors. He calls them the last four doctors that you should mm-hmm. only ever need. Mm-hmm. And that's Dr. Movement, having the right amount of movement, not too much, not enough. Mm-hmm. Dr. Diet, in terms of understanding my own biochemical needs, my relationship with my food. Dr. Quiet, so what is my quiet time? Tai Chi, meditation is one of those. That it also means getting enough sleep, like you were describing before. Mm-hmm. And then Dr. Happiness, how am I feeling in alignment to my values? How am I feeling my connection to my dream? And Dr. Happiness is also my capacity to come into full presence with myself in this moment right here and now. And how am I going with that, if I check in with that? Mm. So they're the four doctors that really support my ability to feel rhythmic and attuned.
Yeah.
And things like that.
Show up how you show up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'll never forget. It was like shortly after we started working together, and I used to meditate every single day before having Rui, and then I kind of lost my way with the practice after he was born, obviously being a new mom and just trying to figure life out.
Yeah.
But I remember you said to me once, I think we were doing a 6 a.m. class, and you said, yeah, I've been up since 4, meditated, and I was like, wait, what? I was like, how do you meditate? How do you get up at 4 a.m. and meditate? Mm. And I remember you saying, I just go to sleep with the kids when we put the kids down. And that stuck with me, and I started implementing that. Mm. So I'll put Rui to bed at like 6:37 and I'll just actually fall asleep with him, which allows me the 8 hours sleep that I need.
Beautiful.
To then wake up, you know, at the time that I need to do my meditative practice to then start my day. So I wanted to thank you for that. I don't think I've told you, but that was a really, like, that was just a small comment you made, but I was like, that's game changing. Sorry, Matt. See ya. I'm going to bed. Where can people find you, and how can they work with you? Because I'm sure a lot of people have listened to this episode and gone, okay, I need that guy in my life.
Yeah, well, most of the time you'll find me at Native State.
Mm-hmm.
from an online perspective, my Instagram handle is Taylor Cecil, or at Your Native State. And then our website, nativestate.com.au, is where a lot of information as to mm-hmm. what we do and personal coaching side of things, a lot of stuff's there. So, Beautiful. Yeah, they're the keys.
Cool. Well, thanks, Tay. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so
much. I knew we'd have a great chat.
Of course we would.
Thanks for being on. I appreciate you coming out.
Thank you.
Wait. Before you go, can I share something crazy with you? So our statistics tell us that 83% of you listening right now don't actually follow the show. And so I wanted to extend the invite. If you loved this episode and took some value away, please do go ahead and hit subscribe or follow to the show on whichever platform you're listening on. It really does make such a huge difference and really helps to support the show. You have no idea how much that little number helps support a self-funded podcast like this. It really helps us to keep bringing more episodes with incredible guests, and the larger the number, the bigger our guests get to be. Plus, it means you'll always be notified when an episode drops without you having to go and look for it. And if you're on Spotify, I wanted to extend the invite to head on over to the Q&A section below. Let's continue the conversation. I would love to hear and read what you have to say, and I always reply. Speaking of connection, I'd also love for you to come and say hello over on Instagram. My handle is at Shani Peach, and it's where I show up the most. I share raw behind the scenes, and it's really where our community comes alive. So I'd love to invite you along. I read every single message that pops into my inbox, and I reply to all of them. So tell me what resonated from today's episode, because I would genuinely love to hear from you. And if you're new here and wanting to dive deeper into some work, our most listened to and shared episodes are episode 2 on nurturing your relationship with money, episode 3 on unlocking the power of your vision, and episode 4, it's all about surrendering to the how and trusting that things will unfold perfectly in divine timing for you. These episodes have transformed so many lives, so if you haven't listened yet, go back and start there, episode 2, 3, and 4. I've also created a whole library of free resources for you over at shanithompson.com. I'll pop the link in the show notes below.
I've got free workshops, guided meditations, and tools to support you on your growth journey. Everything is there waiting for you. And last but not least, we are running a competition right now. Once we hit 100 reviews, I am gifting a limited edition Beats by Dre by Kimi K earbuds to one lucky listener. To be in the running, simply leave a review on either Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Okay, that's it. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing this with anyone who you feel would really resonate with the message. And just thank you for being part of this journey with me. I genuinely love being in your ears. I'll see you on the next episode. Bye.